Earth and Sky.
Welcome to Clear Voices. I'm Jorge Salazar. As you listen to your favorite music, your brain undergoes a flurry of neural activity that remains largely unknown to science. I spoke with Daniel Levitin, a cognitive neuroscientist who runs the Laboratory for Music Perception, Cognition, and Expertise at McGill University in Montreal, Canada. Levitin is the author of This Is Your Brain on Music, The Science of a Human Obsession. He spoke with me about his research into how we perceive music. Here is Daniel Levitin. Dr. Levitin, welcome to Earth and Sky.
Thank you.
What is happening to our brains as we listen to music?
Well, there are a lot of different things. One of the things we've learned using neuroimaging and scanning technology is that music activates almost every region of the brain that we've mapped. So listening to music involves attentional systems and memory, frontal lobe regions that try to figure out what's going to happen next. Interestingly, when you're listening to music, your motor cortex is often activated, especially if the music has a beat. Even if you're not moving, your motor cortex seems to be making preparatory movements as though you were going to dance.
How do you go about measuring something like this?
We try to use converging approaches and different methodologies, but one of the ones that we're using involves either PET, positron emission tomography, or MRI, magnetic resonance imaging. And in the latter case, what we do is we put you in an MRI machine, and the MRI machine is able to track the flow of blood in your brain. And because neurons need the oxygen that the blood carries in order to metabolize, we're able to see which parts of the brain are active during particular tasks. So if I have you mentally practice your tennis serve or listen to music or perform some mathematical calculations, different brain regions are going to be supporting those operations. They're the ones where the blood is going to go, and that's what the MRI machine tracks, essentially.
Could you maybe walk us through some of these biological processes?
Sure. So to begin with, sound impinges on the eardrum, and pressure waves make the eardrum move in and out. And no matter what you're hearing, it gets translated into the eardrum moving in and out. You could be hearing a firecracker or an orchestra or a kitten purr or wind in the trees. All of it ends up as motion in and out of the eardrum. It's the job of the cochlea, the inner ear, and the brain to take this in and out motion and construct some sort of representation of what was really going on in the world. And that's where it gets interesting. It turns out that different parts of the brain support different aspects of this. So there's some neural regions that extract information about the pitch of the sounds that we're hearing. Separate neural circuits for the rhythm, still separate ones for the timbre. That is, timbre is the quality that distinguishes a trumpet, say, from a violin playing the same note, or your voice from my voice if we're saying the same words. That's timbre. A contour is another property of music, the direction that the melody's going. Is it going up or down? Different brain regions have to extract this information. Then it all comes together later in higher brain regions that give us the sense of a complete musical work. It all happens so quickly that we can't imagine that it's actually, segmented like this. By the time we're aware of it, it's just a fully formed impression of the piece.
What is music, and how is it different than noise, and what does our brain have to do with that?
If we want to define music, I would define it, as the composer Varese did, as organized sound. I think we need a kind of inclusive definition like that, because as we go from culture to culture, or even from generation to generation, what sounds like noise to one group of people is music to another, and vice versa. And I think that anything that humans create out of sound with the intention of making it music, we should allow as music. But there are some more or less universal features of all musics. They all use some set of notes, different frequencies. Even drum circles, which are not primarily pitched, the drums are tuned differently, which gives you a sense of different pitches. All music uses rhythm, notes of different durations, variations in timbre. And these are the things in common. Most musics that we know of in the world and throughout history have had the octave, for example, and then the octave is divided into a smaller number of intervals, and those become the building blocks for the composer. So that's how I would answer your question of what music is.
Now, how are musical memories formed?
Musical memories are formed in the way that all memories in general are formed. Everything that you've ever experienced, as far as we can tell, is probably encoded somewhere in your brain. The question is how to get it out, how to recall it. The more times you experience something, the more likely it is to be encoded, and the more likely you will be able to pull it out of memory. With music, if we hear a song 100 times or 500 times, each new listening lays down a separate neural trace, and the sheer number of neural traces that are identical makes it easy to pull that song back up again. Now, one of the interesting things we've discovered about how musical memory works is that not every note of a song has equal priority in memory. We tend to segment music and have natural starting points. Anybody who's tried to learn to play an instrument will tell you this. When they're learning a piece, they can't start from just anywhere in the piece. They start from what are natural beginning points for a phrase or for a section. And our recollection of music works in the same way. If I ask you to sing me the chorus of the song YMCA by the Village People, you don't have to start at the verse. You go right to the chorus. Your brain has segmented it that way. But if I ask you to start on the fifth note of the chorus, you couldn't just do that. You'd have to work your way up to it. There's a hierarchical structure.
Do you have anything encouraging to tell people who think that they don't have the musical gene to learn music?
Well, I think everybody can learn music. Almost everybody, especially if you start early enough. Even adults who, if you can adjust your expectations. My 80-year-old grandmother started playing the piano for the first time at that age, and played all until she died at 97, and she found it very enjoyable. She never got good enough to do concerts, but she got good enough to pick out songs that she recognized, and it kept her brain active. I think the main message here is that whatever age you are, if you're going to study an instrument, you need to practice consistently. You need to play a little bit every day. And even 5 minutes a day, every day, is better than, say, 2.5 hours all at once on a Sunday afternoon. That's just the way the learning in the brain works.
You know, after all these years in the music business and in studying music as a scientist, does music still intoxicate you?
Absolutely. The same things that always affected me still affect me. I still love to listen to the Beatles and to Miles Davis. I have a new appreciation for them now that I understand how difficult it is to make a record from my production experience. And I have a new appreciation for them now that I understand better how difficult it is to do something that's emotionally moving. I listen to everything, from Rachmaninoff to Ludacris and from Ella Fitzgerald to AC/DC.
That was Daniel Levitin, author of the book This Is Your Brain on Music. I'm Jorge Salazar for Earth and Sky, a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.